In downtown Dallas, President Kennedy was shot today just as his motorcade left downtown Dallas. Mrs. Kennedy jumped up and grabbed Mr. Kennedy. She cried, "Oh no." The motorcade sped on. A photographer said he saw blood on the president's head. It was believed two shots were fired. Keep tuned to your NBC station for the later news.
Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion this morning and our special program that we have throughout our roundtable program to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the assassination of JFK. This morning, we are going to be taking your calls for this hour. We welcome your phone calls, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-34-TALK-1, 1-800-348-2551. Our question is a simple one. What do you remember from that day? What do you remember from that day? And we'll be talking about that this morning. We have a wonderful panel before us to talk about their memories as well. And we, of course, will integrate your phone calls and we'll, I think, through the process of this morning, hear from many different people with many different interesting stories to tell. Later on in the program, we're going to be talking to a doctor by the name of Alan Childs, who was a very young physician who was at Parkland Hospital that afternoon and was one of the attending physicians and will tell us, has written a book of really of all the physicians who were involved in the stories they have. Also, we're going to talk to historian Thurston Clark. And in our 11 o'clock hour, we have a 1 hour special of people talking about their remembrances of JFK from people who knew him and worked with him. So we will hear that at our 11 o'clock hour. Again, we welcome your phone calls, 1-800-348-2551. We will get to those in just a few moments. Before we do so, let me introduce our panel to you. WAMC newsman Ray Graff is with us. Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. Also, University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary R. Mayo.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for being with us. And we told you he'd be back.
Yeah.
Author and broadcaster Bob Cudmore joins us. His new book is Hidden History of the Mohawk Valley. And it's a delight to have Bob Cudmore with us this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, Bob, I'm glad to be here.
Appreciate having you here. So first off, we'll say, yes, the question is, what do you remember from that day? I was not yet alive.
You don't remember much then.
I do not remember much.
I was in utero.
You were in utero.
Those recollections I'm not prepared to share with you right
That's
now.
That's right. Understood. Am I allowed to ask?
I was in junior high school.
Okay.
So and you, I remember it vividly.
So we want to talk about that. And of course, Bob has a story to tell because he was in the city of Boston reporting to the people of Massachusetts about their senator and their congressman and their then president, of course. Mm. And again, we welcome your phone calls. Rosemary, what do you remember?
That may have been the day my sister and I entered the news business. We learned about what had happened in junior high school. And when we got home, we rushed into the house, and my mother, who was home with our baby sisters, they were 3 and 4 years old, was making beds and cleaning, which is, I think she's still doing that. And we're the ones who told her. We told her about the disaster. And so it was very somber. I especially remember the following days when we were all sitting around. It was Thanksgiving, of course, and we're sitting around the dining table, the whole family, and that is when Ruby shot Oswald on national television virtually. First time that there was that sort of intense shared experience where the nation is sitting around the TV watching the news. So the combination of like breaking big news, breaking news to our mother, and intense family community watching of TV, I think that's what turned my sister and I into journalists.
Bob, you were already in journalism.
Well, I was a freshman at Boston University.
Yep.
I was 18, and I heard the news. I was going to visit a friend of mine named Jim Holzer, who actually is from Schenectady, and he lived in a dormitory that had been a hotel, and BU had a lot of those. And I knew nothing about the shooting, got in the elevator, came up to his floor, the door opened, and it's bedlam. People are running around and so forth, and what had happened was, just before I got there, somebody had said, "Kennedy's been killed." And somebody else said, good. And they started a fist fight. And so ultimately that was sort of tamped down. And then Jim and I went over to WBUR, you know, which then was really, I hate to say, it was kind of nothing. You know, it wasn't what it is now. But, I mean, nobody had FM radio.
Yeah.
But we did coverage such as it was for the next couple of days. And it's funny how you remember. I usually am the one that forgets things. But I got in touch with Jim before this event. And he doesn't really remember this, but I remember him. I don't think he was in charge of our coverage, but he went over to the blackboard, and we had all these college kids around, and our Ewer tape recorders we were going to take out to the scene. And he wrote, reaction, and he, like, dispatched us. And they dispatched me with a gentleman named Tom McNiff, who I think went on to be the UPI reporter, or a UPI reporter in Boston. And we got box pop. You know, we went out and talked to people and so forth. And the one thing that I remember is we tried to go in the Ritz-Carlton, but they wouldn't let us in because we didn't have ties on. Mm. So, and that's what I remember of that day. I also remember breaking a date with the young woman named Mary, who went on to become my wife. And we really weren't that interested in each other then. I said, well, I don't think we should really get together. And she said, yeah, that's fine with me, she said. And I remember the Ruby, Jack Ruby killing Oswald, but I don't think I saw it on television because I was in my dorm room and I didn't have television. And I don't know, I don't want to hog the floor, but I think I mentioned this to Joe.
And you were making up your date with Mary, and you didn't get to see it. Right. But
tomorrow.
Okay, that's better than my story.
There you go. But in connection with Ruby, there's a sort of interesting local angle. It's in my Gazette column tomorrow, the focus on history, that Ruby's roommate was a man named George Senator, who was a native of Gloversville. And that's kind of the sum and substance of it. He testified at length to the Warren Commission. It's hard to make heads or tails about what he was saying, whether he thought Ruby was part of a plot or not. He said one time yes, but most of the time he said no. And
was this when Ruby was in Chicago or when he had gone to
Dallas?
Wow.
In fact, he was there when Ruby left to, he left to go wire money to one of his dancers. You know, he ran a nightclub.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Senator said, he didn't think he had planned to kill Oswald because Ruby took his favorite dog, Sheba, with him.
Who was in the car.
Who was in the car.
Yeah.
And he said, I didn't think he'd ever leave Sheba alone in the car.
Wow. Interesting.
Throughout the morning and throughout this hour, we're going to be playing some clips of how that day was covered. One of the clips that I remember from maybe it was the 40th anniversary was a commentary, and I remember it being played upon his death, that David Brinkley, the great ABC journalist who is started with NBC and then to ABC, but was just such a great journalist and such a great presence on the air. And he had a commentary at the, probably after an entire day's worth of coverage, he did his commentary at the end of the day, somewhere around 12:40 in the morning before they ended the broadcast day, and to start afresh. And obviously a lot had happened, and this is how David Brinkley summed it up that day. Okay, there's a cut. It's saying the call for it's 02502.
For some final reflection on one of the more horrible days in American history, you find there is a great deal that could be said about the political and other changes we can look forward to now, but I think it would be bad taste to go into that now, and I won't. It has all been shocking, but perhaps one element in the shock was the speed. By the Washington clock, at a little after 1 o'clock this afternoon, President Kennedy was about as alive as any human being ever gets. Young, strong, vigorous, looking forward to no doubt 5 more years, he hoped, of leadership in this country and of the Western world. His wife, young, beautiful, looking very happy, was beside him and seeming to be having a wonderful time and leaning across the back seat of the car to say to him, "You can't say Dallas hasn't been friendly to you." And that was a little after 1 o'clock. 5 hours later, at 6 o'clock, Mr. Kennedy had been murdered Lyndon Johnson was president of the United States. Mrs. Kennedy was a widow, a brave and composed one that nobody could fail to admire. All of them were back in Washington, returning in the same airplane that took them to Texas to an incredible tragedy. And the sheer speed of it was just too fast for the senses. Roosevelt, dead of a stroke, came back here from Warm Springs, Georgia, in a train, the sides of it draped in black crepe. It steamed majestically across the southern landscape toward Washington, taking a little time about it and giving everybody a time to think a bit about what had happened. But not today. There is seldom any time to think anymore, and today there was none. In about 4 hours, we had gone from President Kennedy in Dallas alive to back in Washington dead, and a new president in his place. There is no more news here tonight, and really no more to say, except that what has happened today has been just too much, too ugly, and too fast.
Support for WAMC comes from Oblong Books and Hudson Valley YA Society, presenting Robin Wasserman with her book, The Waking Dark, and Holly Black with her book, The Coldest Girl in Cold Town, Sunday, December 1st, 4 p.m. in Rhinebeck, RSVP requested, oblongbooks.com, and Riverbend Animal Hospital, Route 9 in Hadley, Massachusetts, providing small animal medicine and wellness care, general and referral surgery, canine rehabilitation, laser therapy, and dentistry, riverbendanimal.com.
Mrs. Kennedy, as soon as the president stumped forward, she grabbed him, she cradled him in her arms, and she said, oh no, and tried to hold up his head. Then the car was quickly taken out of line and sped to the hospital. The president and the governor were rushed to Parkland Hospital near Dallas, the Dallas trademark, where Mr. Kennedy was to have made a speech.
Welcome back to the roundtable, and we welcome your phone calls. 1-800-348-2551, a special edition of the program this morning as we commemorate the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. We welcome your phone calls, and we're going to be taking them for the remainder of this hour. Joining me in the studio at WAMC's Ray Graff, University at Albany journalism professor Rosemary Armeo, and author and broadcaster Bob Cudmore. Again, we welcome your calls. We'll go to them now. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1. We begin with Gina in Ballston Spa. Gina, good morning and welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. My dad was a teletype operator with the Associated Press, and we lived in Richmond. And I can remember very clearly, I was almost five. My mom was ironing, and we were all five of us were playing on the floor. And my dad got to a telephone at his bureau in Richmond and called her and said, turn on the TV, something big is coming out of Dallas. And he would do that frequently when there was a news story. We used to see him on the floor of different conventions, you know, teletyping. He went on to become the chief of communications in Philadelphia and later vice president of the AP SatNet. But I remember my mom stopping, ironing, and watching and waiting. And about 15 minutes later, the news flashes came out of Dallas onto the TV. And I remember her dropping the iron and just sitting down on the floor, just sitting down in the middle of all of us and just sitting there staring at the TV.
You know, if I could interject something, a fellow named Frank Musilli does our weather at the radio station I'm at in Amsterdam. When this happened, 63, he was a linotype operator at the Recorder, the local paper. They blew a whistle and gathered all the pressmen and said something to the effect, and I sort of understood what they used to do, get out the 8-point type, where we've got a really big story coming.
Yeah.
He used to bring on the little teletype, the long lines of teletype, and we would play with it like it was, you know, a toy. It was great stuff.
But the thing you remember most is your mom just there staring at the television.
I remember my mom putting the iron down and, like, dropping onto her butt on the floor and just staring. And we knew it was a big deal because Dad had called and Mom had just stopped it. And then it was a very bad time for our household for a couple weeks.
Gina, thank you very much for sharing that with us this morning.
I appreciate it. Thank you for hearing.
Thank you. Let's go to Linda now. Linda is in Arlington. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Joe. I was 11 years old, going on 12, and we were playing kickball at my school, which was right next door to the house that I lived in. And the teachers came out and gathered us up. It was during our lunch recess, and said, everybody go to your classrooms, get your things, and go home. Just go home. And, of course, all I had to do was run up the hill to my parents' house. By then, my mother already had the television on, and she was standing there shaking. So as I was watching it and watching what was unfolding, the great joy that we had, a young president, a beautiful first lady who we followed, it was shattered, absolutely shattered, because they weren't first announcing that he had died. We were still holding out hope that it was, you know, that they were going to fix him. As a child, I'm thinking they're going to fix him. But then when we saw the Walter Cronkite announcement come over the television, it was devastating. It formed the rest of my life. It really, I mean, this time of year, I am not traumatized, but all the sadness comes back. And the great hope of the nation seemed to have just vanished. But the most overwhelming thing for the following days was the fact that Jacqueline Kennedy stood there as such a testament of strength as a young woman. It was just an example to me of how amazing she was as a human being. So, you know, the terrible loss and her great bravery were two things that stayed with me my whole life.
Linda, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate it.
You know, if I could just ask a question of the host.
Yeah.
I've been listening for the week or the weeks. I mean, you have talked to so many people, and I'm confused, but so interested in all the things that people have had to say. Do you have any conclusion about the assassination, what it means and so forth, after listening to all these different points of view?
It is really amazing. I was going to add up the number of pages we read on on actually how much I read on the subject over the past
month. How many interviews did you air this?
There are 21.
Wow.
21, and they're all available at WMC.org. And Ian Pickus, of course, helped on that. And I have to say, you know, what is fascinating both in a journalistic sense is that everyone has their niche. Everyone has the thing that they're looking at. So one historian will look at the last 100 days. One historian will look at the quest for peace. Another historian will look at specifically the day of his death and the changes. And of course, we've had, I wanted to include the various conspiracies out there. We had Roger Stone on talking about how LBJ was involved.
And that was, from a web traffic standpoint, the most, it still might be, the most hit page on really? Of the month was the Roger Stone implicating LBJ in the whole thing. So as far as striking a chord with people who come to this website, that was the biggie.
And then just earlier this week we had on Jesse Ventura, and I said something during that interview, and I'll say this as an answer to your question, which is the one thing that everybody seems to agree on, because I asked that question to everybody. The one thing that everybody seems to agree on is that they believe that 50 years from now, 150 years, 200 years, we still will not know definitively what happened.
There are two articles that hit me that people might be interested in. One is that while everybody, including us, are talking here about what we remember, there's a major project in the Dallas Morning News where they went around to various congregations and got people to talk about what they remember. Of course, they were in Dallas.
Right.
And oddly, that has not been done before. No one has looked comprehensively at what Dallas people remember. It's where we were, but they were right there and knew many of the people involved. It's fascinating. There's also an AP story on these memories. You know, why is this so crystallized and preserved as a moment? You know, and it's because of the baby boomers.
Yeah.
Kennedy was here during the age of that, and we just control so much that our history has to become the history of the people who follow us, of our children and their children. Very odd.
I find it hard to grasp the idea of LBJ doing it, but I must say he hit the ground running as soon as Kennedy was dead. I mean, that was sort of what David Brinkley's talking about. I mean, the swearing in, you know, and he had Mrs. Kennedy in the picture, back to Washington, and there he goes.
And that's our system. That's the way we have it set up. So we don't skip the beat, but yet we still you know, we still mourn and we still allow ourselves the grieving process over several days. I remember, you know, one of the things that I wasn't alive for the day, my father lived in, my mother and father lived in Washington with four children at that point. And my father took all these home movies of the funeral procession, the casket going to Lyon State, and I have all of that footage that we were looking at it the other day. It's really fascinating stuff because it's so quiet. I mean, it's so quiet. We welcome your memories, your recollections of that day, your thoughts that you have on this anniversary. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-348-2551, and we will go back to those phone calls in just a moment, and I thank the people for holding on who are on the line. We'll go back in just a moment. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551.
Support for WAMC comes from Ward's Nursery, Great Barrington, providing cyclamen, begonia, mums, orchids, ferns, and tropicals, featuring craft classes, mini zoo, and Santa's workshop for children. Ward'sNursery.com. And Marshall and Sterling, insurance for business, home, auto, bonds, group benefits, and financial planning since 1864. Our people are your best insurance. Offices in Glenville and Hoosick Falls, MarshallSterling.com. Support for WAMC comes from Dr. Melanie Shi, OMD, Kingston, sixth generation practitioner of acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine, insurance accepted, the Chinese Healing Arts Center, 845-338-6045. And Davidson Brothers Brew Pub, featuring food, ales, entertainment, and more, serving lunch and dinner 7 days a week in downtown Glens Falls, New York. DavidsonBrothers.com.
That the president has died. However, we must emphasize that this report has so far been unconfirmed. And that report came in a few minutes ago and has not been confirmed thus far. And so we are inclined to disbelieve it. We certainly hope, of course, that it is not true.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. We are commemorating the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy on a special edition of the roundtable. This morning we have a terrific panel. WAMC's Ray Graff is here, University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter. Rosemary Armeo joins us, and Bob Cudmore, author, broadcaster, is with us, and he's also the author of the new book, Hidden History of the Mohawk Valley, and it is a delight to have Bob with us this morning. A reminder that at 11 o'clock we're going to be hearing a special broadcast, We Knew JFK, Unheard Stories from the Kennedy Archives. That'll be broadcast at 11 o'clock this morning. And in our 10 o'clock hour, we'll be talking to historian Thurston Clark and also be talking to Alan Childs, who was one of the physicians at Parkland Hospital in Dallas. We want to go back to the phone calls and begin with Maggie and Lennox. Actually, we will go to Joe. All right, we'll get our buttons right here.
Now, I should tell you that position three, if it's not lit up, it still works. There, if it says there's a phone on three, the light went out. It doesn't work.
Oh, it
from doing Vox Pop.
The light went out and no one's home. So.
It's still on.
So according to this, I should have Diana on the phone. Do I have Diana?
You have Diana.
Hello, Diana from Niskayuna. Welcome. Good morning. So what do you remember from that day?
Well, I'm a little nervous because this is the first time I've ever done this on the air. I was a sophomore at Cedar Crest College down in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And I had religion class from 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock. And the bell rang at 2 o'clock, and everyone was in the hall of Alumni Hall. And this one girl came running down the hall screaming, "The president's been shot, the president's been shot." And we all kind of watched her go down the hall and looked at one another and said, "She's crazy. Who would shoot the president?" Wow. And then we went back to our dorms.
Naive and, times, huh?
Oh, and the second big memory was coming back from church on Sunday. My roommate smoked, and we could only smoke in the TV room downstairs. And I went downstairs to let her know that I was back from church. And just as I opened the door, I was watching Jack Ruby shoot Lee Oswald on TV.
Wow.
It was a traumatic weekend all around.
Absolutely. Mm. Diana, thank you so much for calling in. And you did great.
Yes. Thank you.
And then
20 years later, I had a flashback. I was standing at the Schenectady Amtrak station, ready to take a train down to New York, and this man came running up the stairs and said, "The president's been shot."
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And all I could think of was, oh, not again.
Hit the D. Now you were doing great. Oh boy, hold it down. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Well, we're back.
We love your memories. However, if you can not swear during them, that would be much
she was
better.
Really doing well up until that point. Yeah. And then
I thought she was going to replace me on the panel for a while.
No worry about that now, Mr. Cutmore.
She was telling that whole story about going to church. I didn't think she was going to.
It's just a common expression.
That's true. Well, I mean, it's no big deal.
Okay, you tell that to the licensing board of the FCC. Let's go to Maggie in Lenox. Maggie, good morning.
Oh, good morning there. I was a senior in college, Kalamazoo College in Michigan, but I was in South America for the semester doing a senior thesis. It's kind of strange because I was a German major in Colombia, so I was translating a book from German into English for my thesis. Anyway, on November 22nd, I was in the kitchen making fudge, and I don't think I've ever made fudge again, when my younger brother came in and said, "The president has been shot." And in that moment of denial that I'm sure that a lot of us I stuttered, the president? The president of what?
That's right. What country?
Right.
Yeah.
Where?
Just a couple days later, my parents and my younger brother and sister, we set out by car for a 5-day trip from Colombia to Ecuador on all kinds of back roads. And wouldn't you know, our car broke down way up in the mountains in an extremely remote part of rural Ecuador, and many people there spoke an indigenous language, so our Spanish didn't even help us very much. And the houses seemed more like an African village, and I remember being told that there are a few villages like that with round houses with thatched roofs that were built long ago by freed or escaped slaves. I've never researched that, but I'd like to sometime. Anyway, what I remember was I was so moved by these people approaching our car, complete strangers. We really didn't have a common language. And in one way or another, they said to us again and again, they wanted to shake our hands and say, "We are so sorry about your president."
Mm. Wow, that's
and that's
story.
When I really knew that it was an international tragedy.
Absolutely. Mm. That's a great perspective.
That's a great story.
Thanks so much telling us. Maggie, I appreciate
You're
it.
You're welcome.
Thank
You're
welcome. You. We welcome your phone calls. 1-800-348-2551. That frees up a line for you. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Howard in Statsburg. Howard, good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Doing fine, thank you.
Like many of the other people, I was a kid in junior high school in Brooklyn, and I remember them all shuffling us to the auditorium and marching us out of school, not telling anybody what had gone on, and whispers coming through the group. My teacher told me the president was shot. But more poignant than that is a strange recollection I have from the weekend after the president was shot. I was going to a birthday party, and in those days you dressed up in a suit, and I was all dressed up in this suit with a colorful wrap present in my hand, crossing Church and Nostrand in Brooklyn. And my recollection is everybody else was drab gray, and I was there in my colorful suit with my colorful present. And for years, I've had that vision. Hmm. It's like one of those pictures where you gray out everything except one person in the picture. And it's just a strange recollection that's been with me for so many years.
It's interesting of how we thank you very much, Howard. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you calling. It's interesting how we have those flashes of things that we remember, impressions that we keep with us of traumatic moments in our life, of whether they're personal or national or international.
I think Rosemary mentioned something about this, but I remember, you know, living in Boston, I did for some years after the assassination. You know, you'd go to somebody's apartment and they'd have maybe a picture of the Pope and a picture of Kennedy. You know, I mean, there was always a picture of Kennedy.
Very much so, and it is, I think, you'd also, a previous caller talked about 20 years later, and while I was not alive for the assassination of JFK, I remember in the shooting of President Reagan, of the teachers who were on hand that day almost went back to how they handled the Kennedy assassination of assembling the students, bringing them all into the lunchroom, bringing the TVs in, and then ultimately letting us out early to see what happened. Remember that very well.
Yeah, it's the kids in my classes who talk about 9/11. That was their Kennedy trauma.
Absolutely.
They talk about they didn't really understand what was going on, and the teachers. That's a harder thing to explain than the president's been shot.
Well, yeah, because we know.
And they remember one child after another being called out because the parents came to start taking them out. They were afraid. We didn't know what other attacks were coming, so parents started coming to the schools, and there's this great fear. Even years later, now that they understand it, the fear and the uncertainty of that day sticks with them.
Absolutely. We're going to go back to the phones and go to Barbara. Barbara is in Lee. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. I was a junior in college in Newport, Rhode Island on that day. And our campus was along Bellevue, part of it. If anybody's familiar with Newport, Bellevue is the road out to the ocean and whatever. But anyway, on that particular day in Newport, we were changing classes, and everybody just grabbed each other, hugged, cried. But today it just brought back the memories of whenever President Kennedy was in Newport, he would go to St. Mary's Church on Sundays, and in the convertible, he'd go up, or they'd be driven in the up the back streets up to Bellevue, and one of our dorms was on the corner, and he would always... The car would stop at the stop sign, and here we are, because we knew he went to Mass, and he was in town. And he would just shake all of our hands with that wonderful smile of his, and just, and again, that just, everybody feels that way about him. Well, we all felt that way about him. Mm-hmm. He was just so open, and of course, you didn't see that many, or if any, Secret Service people during that period of time. But it just brought back his wonderful persona to me.
It's fascinating because we always talk about the loss of innocence on that day. Mm-hmm. However, how we came together as as a nation.
Yeah.
And that the impulse is to hug one another.
Mm. Yeah, set kind of a pattern for future tragedies, I would think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like Rosemary was talking about 9/11 and so forth.
Absolutely. Barbara, thank you so much.
Okay, thank
you. Appreciate it.
You know, Kennedy campaigned in this area. In fact, Greg Floyd did a piece, and I've got something in the book about it, because he went to Troy, he went to Albany, he went to Schenectady briefly, and then he went to Amsterdam. And I remember skipping school. I was a sophomore in high school to go see him. My friend who went with me, Paul Russo, he jumped up on talking about security, he jumped up on the platform and shook his hands. And they let, you know, that was going on. You know, an Amsterdam cop was sort of just leading him out of there.
Different times.
Yeah.
Kennedy was the first rock star president.
Oh,
there was this huge popular love of him that did not exist, say, with McKinley or certainly with Lincoln. So the death, the murder was a terrible shock. And then, of course, there were a rash of killings after that in 68.
And also, I think from one of the interviews Joe did, that you got the impression, to some extent, it was Dad doing behind the scenes, Joseph Kennedy, who was very adept at motion pictures and advertising.
Right.
And got these photographers to take these wonderful pictures of John and Jackie. and make them into stars.
By the way, big controversy right now because Obama has shut down his White House to photographers taking pictures of him signing bills and doing other official acts. Big protests from reporters in this country.
We'll have to take that up on another day.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a good topic.
It's just I bring it up because it's Kennedy who did reach out. That was the first time that there was the people felt connected to the White House.
Well, in fact, I remember in one of Joe's interviews, I think it was Mr. Reeves, I forget his first name, who said
Richard Reeves,
that when Kennedy came
Both
in,
for the Times.
All of a sudden, Kennedy instituted this idea of all the good news comes from the White House.
Right.
They used to have people in the Commerce Department that would break stories, or the State Department. No, it's good. I want to do
everything. Everything got funneled through, and so consequently, the reporters were very close to that press office and to the president
and to Kennedy himself. They had great access to Kennedy.
We are going to go to one more call, and then we'll take a break. Let's go to Audrey in Audrey. Where are you at?
I'm in Oppenheim, New York.
Okay, great.
November 22nd, 1963, I'm in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean on a Norwegian freighter headed for France. Wow. It's my celebration of my 21st birthday in October and my graduation from UMass last spring. There are 13 other passengers on the boat. Crew members are courteous, and we dine in the evening with the officers. Everyone speaks English. The weather's been cloudy but calm until now. The wind's picked up, and the captain seems edgy. He's usually not so stern-looking. I wonder if a storm is on the way. Time for supper. We go into the dining room and get seated. The captain hits his glass with a spoon. He has something to tell us. Your president was shot today, he begins. There's a moment of shocked silence, then a rush of questions. Is he okay? Who did it? Why? Where is he? Why would anyone shoot President Kennedy? Again, a tap on the glass. Your president is dead, says the captain. There is another longer pause, silence. It couldn't be a joke. The captain is serious. No one has anything to say now. Silence. We eat in silence. Passengers get up to go to their bunks. I join them. The truth starts to sink in. There is little to say. A day and a half later, the officers are set on docking at Le Havre to attend a French service in Kennedy's honor, and they make every effort to arrive on time. We get in at 6:10 p.m. The officers leave for the memorial. We passengers stay on the boat. Regulations do not permit us to leave after 6 p.m. We'll have to wait until morning. Then we'll go our separate ways, saddened and bewildered.
Audrey, thank you very much for sharing that writing with us. I appreciate it.
It was an intense time. Thank you.
Indeed. Thank you very much. We're going to take a quick break. We welcome your phone calls, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1. We'll continue our conversation of what you remember about November 22nd, 1963, after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Adelphi University Hudson Valley Center's Graduate School of Social Work, now offering mental health practitioners a postgraduate certificate program in military trauma treatment, adelphi.edu/Hudson Valley. And Steve Lewis Subaru, Hadley, Massachusetts, a new and used Subaru dealer serving the Pioneer Valley, Hartford, and Springfield, offering new Subarus plus used cars, trucks, and SUVs. SteveLewisSubaru.com.
Good morning and welcome back to our special coverage of the 50th anniversary of President John F. Kennedy's assassination, November 22nd, 1963, commemorating this anniversary and taking your phone calls this morning about what you remember from that day. And we'll go back to the phones and have a few more minutes to take some calls. Let's go to Kat, who joins us now. Kat, good morning.
And where?
Kat, you're on.
Hi. I actually wasn't alive when that happened, but I just remember how my mom took the news, like, over the years. Like, when she was a little kid, her parents got divorced, which back then is, like, was unheard of.
Rare.
And I think she looked at, like, the country and, like, she grew up on Happy Days, and she just always... She kind of had an idealistic look at the outside world, and when Kennedy got shot, it was like, to her, it was the beginning of the end of innocence, like a lot of people were feeling back then. With her, I think it really struck her on a personal note, and that's just what I remember about it. I mean, like, over the years, you know, Lenin and more people that she idolized got shot and killed, and...
Well, I think that's a good point. I mean, that idea, thank you very much. I think, as you were indicating, Rosemary, about, you know, 1968, and then it's almost where you, not that you become used to it, but it is, unfortunately, becomes all too common.
No one today would ever say, who would shoot the president, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's right. Yes, very good point. Let's go to Judith in Pittsfield. Judith, go ahead. Judith, are you there?
I am here. Good morning. My friends call me Cookie, but let me share my story with
well,
you.
Well, can we call you Cookie?
Let's call her Cookie.
Please, you're my friend.
Okay.
Cookie.
My
cookie.
Radio friend. I was a 20-year-old student and was spending my junior year at the University of Nottingham in England. I, as a student, wanted to know what was going on in my home country, so I used to listen to the Armed Forces radio. And that's how I heard the news, listening to the radio. I was the only American at the university and was treated with great deference by the university officials and other students. There were no televisions available for the students, but the warden, that's the name that the English call what we call dorm mothers,
right.
Mm-hmm. invited me into her private apartment where she had a television, or a telly, as she called it, so that I could watch the funeral service. So my memory is being out of the country and being treated so specially by English people who had great respect for the president, and they transferred that respect to me.
That's a beautiful story. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I enjoyed sharing. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Let's go over to Linda now. Linda's in Wappingers Falls. Linda, go ahead.
Good morning. I was a freshman at Georgetown University in Washington when Kennedy was assassinated. Some friends of ours, we went down to the White House on Saturday and watched all of the dignitaries' limos coming through.
Yeah.
The next day, I stood on that line for about 5 hours waiting to get through the Capitol Rotunda. And somebody had mentioned it earlier, that incredible crowd of people waiting on that line just for a glimpse of who, as far as I was concerned back then, was like everything hopeful for the country. It was so quiet that there could be that many people standing on that line for that long. And then a friend of mine who couldn't go home for Thanksgiving because she lived in Denver and couldn't afford the airfare, she came back to my home with me in New Jersey. And interestingly enough, I have no memory of that Thanksgiving at all.
Mm.
I just remember watching a lot of TV.
Right. Mm. Well, sure, it overshadows everything. Linda, thank you very much for the phone call.
Funny, I have that memory too. I mean, I remember all those things I told you before about going to the dormitory and covering the story, but what happened on Thanksgiving weekend, I have no recollection.
No, because it really, it does. It overshadowed. What was the day of the week? Do you remember the day of the week?
The Friday was the day. You mean what?
It was a Friday.
No, yeah. It's this year.
Yeah, that's right. So it is Friday. Yeah.
Sunday was
the
Jack Ruby killing Oswald, and I think Monday was the funeral.
Hmm. We are out of time for more telephone calls. We would love for you to write to us, roundtable at WAMC, and we will certainly, you can also go to our website and post these as well, and be a wonderful collection to have. A reminder that all of the interviews and all of the parts of the series, including what we'll hear today, will be on the website, is on the website, wamc.org, wamc.org. Rosemary, Ray, Bob Cudmore, a great pleasure to have you with us on this morning. I thank you so much for taking part.
You bet.
Thank you.
Glad to
thank
be
you
here.
Very much. Again, you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.